You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Friday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Make sure to subscribe on iTunes and rate and review us. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil. And we're recapping the Heat's 115-99 win over the Boston Celtics. The Heat took advantage of a Celtics team playing on the second night of a back-to-back and led by as much as 26 points. Boston made a run in the third quarter, cutting Miami's lead to 8 after a 23-3 run. But Dwayne Wade gave the Heat a spark and scored Miami's final 5 points in that third quarter to hold them off. Wade scored 11 of his team-high 19 points in the second half, and the Heat got the win. And after dropping the last two, they get the win. They get back to 500, and at 20-20, are a half game up on the Nets for 6th seed in the East. But David, that was a fun game. The way that Wade finished and it just being on national TV on TNT made it pretty special.
It's interesting because you mentioned Wade, and it's funny because across the country, he's still Miami's biggest story. Like the narrative surrounding the Heat is mostly built on Dwayne Wade. He's easily the most recognizable player on this team. And he, of course, not surprisingly, comes up with a big game when he's on national television. And he looked really sharp. He had some nice moves near the basket. He had some great shots from the perimeter, played a really solid game. This was the kind of version of Wade that we all want to remember, that the national television audience wants to see. And so, you know, knowing that he's getting as many votes as he is for the All-Star game, it's not that surprising, but it's also pretty encouraging to see Wade playing at his highest. But you're absolutely right that this was also a fun game. This was perfectly symbolic, a representative of what the Miami Heat have been. A lot of different scoring contributions, some good efforts all around, nice gains from Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow at the point looked particularly sharp. You got some contributions from guys that most people probably haven't heard of, like Derek Jones Jr., Roddy Magruder, Deion Waiters. Of course, everybody knows who Deion is, but he still had some nice big baskets as well. And Bam Adebayo looked sharp, particularly defensively, against guys like Horford and Daniel Tice. So this was a really, really solid game. And again, just shows what the Miami Heat is all about. I think you probably, you know, at the start of the season with Miami struggling as much as they were, no clear identity, and or going away from whatever their strengths were, this is kind of showing the national audience that Miami is a much better team, you know, along the lines of, you know, what I've said all season, to be honest with you. Not to pat myself on the back, but this was clearly a playoff team. And, you know, it looks like they're still in contention for a playoff spot and maybe even a dangerous one. I know a lot of people probably were encouraged. And again, from a national perspective, they probably saw that this team could be a little dangerous in the postseason, that they have the depth, the commitment to defense, and enough scoring to make things interesting. Now, you have to take it, you know, you have to take into consideration the fact that this was a back-to-back set for Boston. They were a little tired. And, you know, some of their young guys do play much worse in away games than they do in Boston. Tatum, Rozier, Jaylen Brown, those guys all, for whatever reason, score much more at Boston than they do away from Boston. So that certainly was a factor as well. But this is about the positives. This is about Miami looking sharp on national television. After a tight loss to Denver and a blowout to a bad Atlanta Hawks team, this is much more encouraging for Miami fans.
And really quick, you mentioned Dwayne Wade there with the All-Star votes that he's getting. Make sure you go out this weekend. Make sure that you are voting for Dwayne Wade. He has after leading the Eastern Conference in votes after first returns for guards, he's in second place right now. He's got a smidge of a lead over third place. So go out and vote. Go to vote.nba.com. Vote for Dwayne Wade. Make sure you're doing that. You mentioned how this is the Heat. This is kind of Heat basketball. This is what the Heat are. And you talked about how you believe that this was a team that could compete for a playoff spot, and you were right. And one of the things that we were talking about a lot on this podcast was, okay, it kind of feels like the power dynamics on this team has shifted, where the veterans are no longer the clear-cut best players on the team. Guys like Winslow, Richardson, and even Bam Adebayo need to play more. It is not a coincidence that Josh Richardson with 34 minutes, Justice Winslow with 32 minutes, Derek Jones Jr., who's been really nice for the Heat this season, 29 minutes, and Bam Adebayo with 27 minutes, the four leading minutes getters on the Heat for this game. That's not a coincidence, and they were among the four best players that the Heat had. I mentioned Dwayne Wade. He was up there. I thought Hassan Whiteside played a strong game. I want to talk about him later. But Winslow had a really nice game, flirted with a triple-double there, got his second double-double with points and assists of his career, I think. Mm-hmm. 13 points, 11 assists, 7 rebounds, no steals, so he didn't get the Spo triple-double, the 14 or 15 points, 12 rebounds, 10 assists, and 5 steals, I think it is. Didn't quite get to that for Spoelstra, but got darn near close. And then Josh Richardson, just as Dwayne Wade was having a big second half, Josh Richardson stepped up in the second half too, scored a bunch of points. And I think it was a really big game for those young guys on a national stage. In our preview before the game, we talked about just that idea about this being an opportunity for those guys to show out, and they did. And Point Winslow was good. Richardson was the second banana scorer that he needed. Derrick Jones Jr. was all over the place. Just his hands have the mind of their own. He's just rebounding everything. And Bam Adebayo, like you said, I mean, I saw a lot of people say, wow, he looks really good. He looks really versatile. He's got a nice skill set that could really translate to today's game. And I think people saw that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know that would have been the idea about this team going into this game from, a national perspective. If they had said what this Heat team was all about, they probably would have focused on an aging Wade and a young core that might not necessarily be that good, and Hassan Whiteside, and probably Goran Dragic as the team's lone all-star, at least in recent years. That he's probably one of the more recognizable names nationally. But then you start to see, Point Justice, who you just recently wrote about, and his evolution there at that position, and how much he's flourishing in that position. And Josh Richardson, you hear his name in trade rumors for Jimmy Butler, and you wonder, you saw a lot of people from the Minnesota side of it saying, oh, why would we want Richardson? A lot of people in Philadelphia saying Robert Covington is significantly better than Josh Richardson. I think this is a game that changes that narrative a lot across the country, because Richardson looked very, very effective. Not only did he do a great job rebounding and scoring, but he also had 6 assists. He looked really solid defensively, and it was just a really, really good game. And Adebayo, a guy that stashed on the bench and behind Whiteside as far as national recognition, he had a much more impactful game, I think.
Let's go to Twitter, take some of your questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This one comes from @Wade_County. That's 4 in a row versus the Celtics. Can this be a good matchup in the postseason? Quickly, it's actually 3 in a row against the Celtics. Miami lost the first game of last season against Boston. So 3 in a row against the Celtics. Look, I think this could be an interesting matchup in the playoffs, but right now the Heat probably top out as the 6th seed in the East, right, David? I think there's a clear top five in the Eastern Conference that Miami has a pretty substantial deficit to in the wins column. But if the Heat top out as a 6th seed, can Boston get to a number 3 seed so that they can match up in that first round bracket? Because this is not likely a second round matchup just based on how things shake out.
I mean, Boston's shown significant improvement. One of the things that we talked about in the preview, obviously, is that they've won a bunch of games recently, 7 of their last 10, et cetera. This was a team that looked much sharper than they have in the past, but tonight was not representative of that. And they were, coming off the second night of a back-to-back set, and they looked very tired. And
settled for a lot of mid-range shots. Didn't get to the basket at all. They didn't play a good game. Like, Miami played a good game. The Celtics did not play a good game.
Right. Kyrie looked great. Everybody else, not so much. Right. And this team kind of, thrives on their versatility and their depth. And that wasn't really shown in tonight's effort. So as far as Boston's concerned, I could see them trying to get past an Indiana. Maybe if Oladipo gets hurt or something like that. He's already missed some time. Miles Turner's been out lately. So I wonder if they might be able to compete for the 4th seed, the 3rd seed.
Well, maybe if Philly drops off, like if this whole big 3, Ben Simmons, Embiid, Butler thing really just like goes to crap for them, that would be how it goes, because it seems like Milwaukee and Toronto are kind of destined to be 1 and 2 in one order or the other. But as far as the matchup goes, I actually do think it's a good matchup. I think last season we were kind of like, we were talking about the Celtics as a possible matchup too. I think there was a lot of people split on whether or not it would be a good matchup. But the Heat are clearly confident when they play the Celtics. That much is true. And I don't know how many, like, it feels like this team is a year or two away from really coalescing because they just haven't yet. Right. And Kyrie Irving, as good as he is, he's their best player, obviously. Miami's got like 3 guys that they could throw at him to limit him and to slow him down. And as good as he was tonight, he wasn't like on fire, Kyrie Irving, right? And again, back-to-back, blah, blah, blah. But still, I'm not scared of Jaylen Brown, even though he's really good. He's been good in the playoffs, but the Heat have bodies to throw at him. Al Horford seems to have, like, age is starting to catch up with him a little bit. They don't have much depth behind him. And I don't know, like, Gordon Hayward, it's his first year back. Tatum's got, like, this weird ghost of Kobe thing going on. And so I think, like, if there's a year to pounce on the Celtics, this would be it. Like, if you look at all the possible matchups, like, wouldn't you prefer Boston over Toronto, over Milwaukee probably? Like, I think, sure. I would.
And Indiana, for some reason, tends to play Miami pretty well. I can't recall a time where Miami has actually beat Indiana since Oladipo joined the team. Maybe that's just my misremembering things, but it seems like they've had our number. One of those few teams that just has Miami's number pretty consistently.
Them and the Hawks.
And the Magic, of course. But, you know, you're right. Maybe it does match well in Miami's favor. And you have enough defensively there. I think both teams pride themselves on defense. If you can get a bad night or a shaky night from Kyrie, maybe you can take advantage of that. And again, if these young guys play worse away from Boston, that certainly skews in Miami's favor. I didn't see the zone defense a lot tonight. Did he break it out at all?
I didn't notice it for long stretches. I think he tried it a little bit in the first half, but I didn't really notice it very long. By the way, Eric Spoelstra completely outcoached Brad Stevens tonight. Worth mentioning.
Ouch.
This question.
Yeah, you're a big fan of Stevens.
This question comes from Stan, who writes in, do you think Spo finally found the right rotations with taking minutes away from Rodney Magruder instead of Derek Jones Jr.? Look, the rotation conversation will continue after this podcast. We'll touch on it here a little bit, but Rodney Magruder, averaging 29 minutes a game this season, played only 15 tonight. Derek Jones Jr., like I mentioned before, played a whole lot of minutes. He played 29 minutes in the game. Yeah. I don't know that that's going to be the case going forward, but Spo did go 11 deep. We've talked a lot about him being reluctant to go that deep on his bench. But Kelly Olynyk only played 5 minutes, so he didn't really go 11 deep. Like, he tried Tyler Johnson, Deion Waiters, and Derek Jones Jr. all in the first half at different points, as well as Kelly Olynyk. I guess kind of did what you sort of recommended a few podcasts ago, David. Like, you kind of just, like, throw the guys out there, test them out, see who's got it going. Kelly Olynyk didn't really have it going, right. So he settled on those 10.
Yeah, that was, to me, particularly encouraging. From a guy that's like Spoelstra, who's been so rigid with his rotations, like when a starter goes down, he brings in somebody deep off the bench to start, et cetera. We've seen that a number of times over the course of Spo's coaching career. This was more flexible, more, you know, kind of watch and react. And that sort of thing is, to me anyway, more encouraging, because he could have stuck with Rodney Magruder, who's a little outclassed by Boston's bigger wings. Instead, he went to a guy that creates matchup problems with his length and athleticism in Derek Jones Jr., and it certainly tilted in Miami's favor. And again, with Olynyk, you know, one of the things that we talked about in the preview was whether or not he might have another quote-unquote revenge game against his former team. He looked really shaky at the start, fumbled the ball a couple times, just looked completely discombobulated and out of context. He just had no idea what was going on tonight. For whatever reason, he looked really, really shaky against the Celtics. And Spoelstra, to his credit, said, you know what, I'm not going to go with Kelly. We're getting good quality minutes from DJ and Bam Adebayo. Why go with Olynyk any further than we have to? And it worked out. So I like this from Spoelstra. And as far as I'm concerned, why not keep going this way, you know?
Derek
Magruder is great in spots, but he can't be relied on to carry this team.
Yeah, and he started defensively against Kyrie Irving. But like we've said, like, he's not the only guy that they could throw at Kyrie, right? They've got Richardson, they've got Winslow. I think there's a little bit of course correction also by playing Derek Jones Jr. more after he didn't play at all against Denver. Miami lost that game against the Nuggets in large part because they got out-rebounded. And the Heat played Derek Jones Jr. tonight. They got 51 rebounds to Boston's 37. So I do think there's a little course correction happening there as well. But as far as Kelly Olynyk, Hero Ball Pod asks on Twitter, the defense was good all night. Kelly Olynyk only played 5 minutes. Is this a coincidence? David, I agree with you. I think Kelly he looked shaky when he was in there, but I don't want to go out and as far as to say that Kelly is the reason why. Like, he doesn't make or break the defense. He's actually been a plus defensively for the season. The Heat are 4 points better in defensive rating with Olynyk on the court versus when he's off the floor. But that said, I think they had a real advantage with the bigger guys like Whiteside and Bam Adebayo in the paint. I think Spo saw that as an advantage and went with it.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think, again, it was a flexibility from Spoelstra we hadn't seen, and I don't think it's like I don't think Olynyk is a bad defender per se. He moves his feet okay for a guy his size. He doesn't get a lot of steals. He doesn't get a lot of blocks despite his size. So, you know, he's not an elite level defender, but he's okay in spots. And again, as you pointed out, the defensive rating with him on the floor is significantly better. So that's encouraging. And at the same time, go ahead.
No, I mean, he kind of plays, he's like Al Horford light, right? Like he kind of plays the same sort of way Al Horford does. And you're not going to out Al Horford. So you might as well just go the other way and try to be bigger than Al Horford and sort of like bully him in the paint. It's time for our stat of the game.
Take that for data.
David, what do you got?
Well, Miami had 33 assists on 46 made field goals. I think that was pretty significant. The other night when we talked about Denver in that recap, we pointed out that they had, I want to say, 32 assists to their 40-something made field goals. In Miami's case, this was a significant leap. Normally, they only finish with about 23 assists per game. So this was a significant improvement from them. They were just moving the ball pretty well. And I think a lot of that was because of Boston's tired legs. They weren't able to rotate as easily defensively. But still, just Miami looked much sharper, much more like the Denver team that we saw the other night, where the ball just wasn't sticking. They were finding guys as they were cutting. They were moving the ball well. It looked particularly good. And I know you've got a statistic to show to prove how Miami was assist happy on tonight's game. But it was really nice offense from a team that has struggled offensively for most of the season. This was perhaps their best offensive game of the year.
I almost wonder if they just watched the film from that Denver game and just kind of watched the Nuggets even more than they watched themselves and were like, let's just play like that. Let's get 50 rebounds. Let's get 30 assists. Like I want like
Bam Adebayo with 5 assists.
Yeah.
I mean, that's impressive.
That's insane. I mean, most of them were like on the dribble handoffs and stuff, but he was in the game. He was creating space with screens and passing off the ball on those dribble handoffs. He did a great job. I think a lot of it with Point Winslow was a big deal. Him and Dion and Josh Richardson, all of those guys, did a nice job of driving and kicking and just finding open shooters. Miami.
Can we give credit to Dion for that?
Yes.
Because I think he's injected something different that this offense didn't have a few weeks ago. I mean, a lot of people will focus on Waiter's shot-making ability, but his playmaking is up there with anybody else's on the team, and I think he just shifts the way the offense plays because he's so aggressive with the ball. He's going to drive to the rim, and if he can't find a good shot, even a shot that he's comfortable taking, he'll find somebody out in the perimeter. So I think that just makes the offense a little bit more free-flowing than it was earlier in the season.
Especially while Dragic is out too, right? And because we haven't seen like point justice with Dragic, but we're seeing point justice with another creator like Waiters. 3 of 12 shooting on the night for Dion with 8 points, took 7 3-pointers, only made 2 of them, but he had those 4 assists, and he was a plus 10 in the box score. And I think that reflects exactly what you're talking about. My stat of the game was 2, and that was the amount of assists that Hassan Whiteside has. Now, David, how many times do you think this season Whiteside has had multiple assists in a game?
Oh, 0?
9 times.
Really?
9 times. I was as surprised as you were. I looked it up right after the game. 9 times this year. Multiple assists. Like, I'm proud of Whiteside. Like, good job, man. Like, look, the Heat in general pass the ball a lot. We always wondered, like, with how much the Heat pass the ball, how come Whiteside can't just, like, stumble his way into an assist or two every night? Well, now he is. So, great job. But moreover, I wanted to use this as an opportunity just to give credit to Whiteside. I thought he played an awesome game. He wasn't in the game down the stretch in the fourth quarter. That was Bam Adebayo's minutes. When the game started to pick up in pace a little bit, it kind of started going up and down a little bit more. Bam Adebayo was the guy that he went to. But Whiteside, early in the game, it wasn't a loud night for Whiteside. 9 points, 10 rebounds, no blocks, 2 assists. Wasn't a loud night for Whiteside, but was really effective, and he played his role perfectly in 21 minutes. He was setting really good screens. There was 2 screens early on where he's going to get credit for the screen assist that set Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson free to the rim. I think it was that little floater that Winslow hit. Whiteside created some space for him with a really good screen. He had a really nice assist to Josh Richardson on a 3. It was not quite a cross-court pass, but like a 3-quarter-court pass, but it was he showed good vision. He got Josh Richardson the ball in motion. Richardson hit the 3. It was a perfect pass for him. I was just really impressed with Whiteside's floor game overall. And I like we don't need him to go out and get a triple-double with blocks. We need him to go out and have nights like this. This was perfect.
Now, look, I was looking at Whiteside early in the game, and I mean like in the first few minutes of play. And to me, he looked a little out of place. Like there were a couple situations there where he clogged the lane for James Johnson, who was mm-hmm. driving into the rim. At one point, Johnson had to like elbow his way past Whiteside before Whiteside could get into the lane and clog it again. So there were like two successive drives that Whiteside almost ruined for James Johnson on that second opportunity. Like I said, Johnson had to clear his way past Whiteside so they could get the easy layup. But at the same time, to his credit, look, Spoelstra stuck with Whiteside even when they took Al Horford out. And I really liked the effort and intensity from Whiteside from that point forward. Like, he out-rebounded Tice. He chased loose balls. There was that one time he went out of bounds and threw it off Marcus Morris. I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen Hassan Whiteside do that. This isn't him diving to the floor and trying to corral a loose ball or anything like that, but it was just as good an effort, I think. And it was an impressive game. And, you know, again, like you said, it's a good point. It doesn't need to be a spectacular, gaudy statistical night. It just needs to be a solid overall effort where he doesn't make mistakes and he's willing to share the ball. And that was clearly evident tonight.
And the Heat outscored the Celtics 46-30 in points in the paint. And that was a big reason why. And a big reason why they were able to open up an early lead and kind of put this game away relatively early, despite that third quarter run that the Celtics made. That's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. If you have a smart speaker and you got one as a gift over the holidays, you could tell it to play podcast Locked On Heat. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Wrap it up, B.